Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our spring membership drive, and we're going to talk more about that in just a few minutes. But first, it's the biggest week in birding. Seriously, it's longer than 7 days, actually. It's that big. And the best place to be in all of North America right now is in Northwest Ohio at the Black Swamp Bird Observatory, among other places. Joining us to explain the biggest week and what you'll find in Northwest Ohio is Ken Kaufman. Ken is an expert birder, naturalist, artist, and photographer, and best-selling author. He is the originator of the Kaufman Field Guide series, which includes books on birds, butterflies, mammals, and insects. His latest, The Field Guide to Advanced Birding, Understanding What You See and Hear. It was just out last month, and Ken is with us during this busiest week of the year. Thank you, Ken.
Well, thanks, Ann. It's good to be here.
It's kind of, you know, overwhelming. I got on the Black Swamp Observatory's website and was humbled by the fact that you're with us today. So thank you, because you're doing all kinds of programs since Sunday all the way through this week.
Yeah, well, it is a busy time. There are other people who are working a lot harder than I am at this event. I'm giving 17 programs altogether, but it's actually only 12 different ones because I get to repeat a few.
But you also like to go out and just see the birds yourself, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll do that next week. No, we've been out some. I mean, it's there are amazing numbers of birders in the area now, thousands. It's very hard to get a count on them. They're as hard to count as the birds are, but there are tens of thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands of birds migrating through, and certainly the number of visiting bird watchers is in the thousands.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive. Make your pledge right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. Our goal this hour is $3,000. We can meet this goal with your help. Online pledges count toward the goal, too, at WOSU.org. And with a pledge of support at the $120 level, our thank you gift to you will be the new Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. This book is the newest book by birding expert Ken Kaufman. This book is so new, it is not even 1 month old. Get this book and support public radio for a pledge of $120. Call right now while Ken is on the air. It'll make him feel really good. Go online to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Priscilla, Doug, and Jan, all from Columbus, who supported us last hour. Now it's a new hour, and we have a new goal. We have $2,820 to go. Please make that call right now, and then if you're a bird lover and you have questions for Ken, we welcome them. The number to call is 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we can also get your questions or comments via Facebook if you can do that at the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, or you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. But before you make any other calls, if you could pick up the phone and make this one, 1-866-897-9678, and make your pledge of support for WOSU and 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher and everything else we bring you every day, day in and day out, 365 days a year. We'd appreciate it. And for those of you who have made shown your support so far during this pledge drive, thank you very, very much. And moving on to Ken Kaufman. Ken, you know, thank you for joining us today during this busy, busy week. We really appreciate it. You do it every week because we have our pledge drive every week during the busiest week.
Yeah, well, I just public radio is really important to me. I've been listening to it for years. I appreciate the fact that I get really in-depth coverage of things, and it's not sound bites. It's really deep coverage of things that are important. And I can't count the number of times that I've been driving and have gotten to where I was going, and there's something on public radio that's just so interesting that I turn off the car but leave the radio on, and I'm sitting there in the parking lot listening.
Yep, me too. Just did it the other day in This American Life. you know, probably I can't, you know, once a week at least, except in the winter when I shut the garage door and then I have to go in. I can't see out there and do that. But are there, even during the biggest week of the year, are there better times than others to birdwatch, even where you're at?
Well, there are, yeah, because it's so weather dependent. Northwestern Ohio is a real mecca for birdwatchers at this time of year because there's such big concentrations of migratory birds. These little birds like warblers that have spent the winter in the tropics and they're headed for the spruce forest of Canada, but they're stopping off here on the south shore of Lake Erie. When they're flying north, that's sort of a barrier to them, so they stop and they wait for a few days. But the number that we have on a given day depends on what the weather has been like just before, because they're migrating at night, and they have to conserve energy while they can, so they wait for a tailwind.
Okay.
So after a south wind, and if there have been clear skies and so on, then we may get a really big invasion of these little birds.
How many do you estimate will drop by during this migratory season, or any given migratory season?
Well, you know, I was talking with some of the researchers from Black Swamp Bird Observatory the other day, and we were just trying to guess how many individual birds might stop over just in these couple of counties up here on the lakeshore. And, you know, it's got to be in the millions. We go out into a little 7-acre woodlot, like up at the McGee Marsh Wildlife Area, or one of the woodlots on the Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge, and there may be a couple of thousand little warblers in there in just a small area. And you multiply that by, all the little woodlots and things along the lakeshore, and then the fact that there's turnover every day. It's staggering numbers. It's a high percentage of the whole populations of some of these small birds.
You heard about the Kirtland warbler sighting at OSU last week?
I did. That was really, really impressive because That's a very, very rare bird. You know, the total world population is only around 3,000, which is, you know, that's a scary small number for a small wild bird. They winter in the Bahamas, and they spend the summer mostly in just a few counties of Michigan. And this area in northwest Ohio, where I am, is the only place where they're seen consistently in migration. So having one in Columbus was just really, really amazing.
I wanted to ask you about something, because when they reported it, there were a bunch of people, you know, toddled over to the OSU campus to check it out, of course, understandably. And they were there with their binoculars and their cameras and all that. But I wondered, when you get a bunch of people together like that, doesn't it scare the bird away?
Well, you know, they've got wings, and so if they were scared, they would.
I guess maybe the question is, why doesn't it? I guess they're just used to humans, and.
Well, we're not really that relevant to them, you know. We're the warbler's something. I mean, Kirtland's warbler is large for a warbler, but it's still smaller. It's smaller than the average sparrow, and they're very fast moving. And I don't know anybody. I've never met anyone yet who would have been able to catch a warbler by hand. So. It's like, what do they have to be afraid of?
Good point. Just us, 1-866-897-9678. We need you to show your support for WOSU and 89.7 right now. This is listener supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Call 1-866-897-9678 and make a pledge of $120 and pick up your very own copy of Ken Kaufman's brand new book, The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. This book will help you understand what birds you see and hear. This book is for birders who want to advance their field skills. It is not for advanced birders. It is a guide for birders who want to better understand their hobby. Pick up this thank you gift for a pledge of $120. Go to WOSU.org and make that pledge online, or go to 1-866-897-9678. Call that number and make your pledge via the phone. I just dropped by and visited a little bit with the volunteers who are waiting, standing by for your call right now. Give them something to do. This is the best payment we can give them is more calls to make them feel needed. 1-866-897-9678. We have some warbler sound. Let's hear that now. That's the black-throated green warbler. That's the male adult Collins song. You say that's one of the easiest song types to learn in your book, Ken. Why is that?
Well, for one thing, it doesn't vary as much as most of the warbler songs. There are some yellow warblers, just crazy. Yellow warblers have got hundreds of different songs, and they even one individual male may sing 20 different songs, and so it can be really, really confusing. But the black-throated green warbler has just got two basic song types, and doesn't vary that much. So it's saying either zoo z zoo zoo z, or z z z zoo z.
I'm laughing out of being impressed.
Well, the birds do it better than I do, but it actually there's sort of a language to it. They use these two different song types in different situations to communicate in different ways. You know, when a bird sings, it's not just like, you know, it's happy and it's trying to make beautiful music. It's their communication, and it's the male bird singing to defend a territory, to warn other males to stay away. And he's also singing to try to attract a mate or to communicate with his mate if he already has one. And the thing is, these warblers will use two different songs for those two different situations. So so the male will sing the zoo zee, zoo zoo zee. First thing in the morning when migrant birds might have arrived overnight, he's just singing, okay, this is my territory. Later in the day, after he determines that there isn't any real threat out there and he's just staying in touch with his mate, he'll sing the zee, 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 zoo, zee, which sounds much more romantic.
Good timing. The sounds of birds, the bird calls, you get into that in a lot more detail in the Field Guide to Advanced Birding, right?
Yeah, I just talk about ways to learn the songs. There are different strategies you can use for learning to recognize them. And it's also useful to know how the bird learns its own song, because that way you understand if occasionally we'll run across a bird that's doing the wrong song. The wrong song. It's not that it's just a nonconformist. There's an element of learning in their songs. They have to hear the song of their own kind in order to learn it. And sometimes they latch onto the wrong model. And so they wind up singing something that doesn't sound quite right.
If they're raised by another bird or around other birds, can they accidentally pick something up like that?
Yeah, they'll sometimes pick up the song of another bird that they happen to hear in the same area. So, you know, you'll hear I've seen things like a field sparrow that sounded like a prairie warbler, and field sparrows and prairie warblers are sometimes found together. So it must have just clued in on the wrong bird in the neighborhood when it was learning.
My producer, Amy Jurevich, says the phones are too quiet, and if we get another two or three calls, then we will hear more birds. And she's going to hold the sparrow hostage. So,
All right. Now, this sparrow, you need to hear this sparrow.
Free the sparrow. Free the sparrow.
It's the most amazing bird song you're ever going to hear. So someone needs to call in.
Free the sparrow. That's our new, Free the sparrow. Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Our gift to you at the $120 pledge level is Ken Kaufman's newest book, The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. Understand what you see and hear. It is not for advanced birders. It's to make, serious hobbyists into advanced birders if they want. It gives you a lot more insight into how to identify birds by sight and sound in other ways. So 1-866-897-9678 is the number to call to show your support. Right now, we have a $3,000 goal this hour. We're far from meeting that goal at this point. So give us a call, 1-866-897-9678. If you're interested in the book, Field Guide to Advanced Birding, we're going to talk more about that this hour, and it's also our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. But give what you can afford. We understand. Give what you can afford, and that's all we could ever ask or hope for. But show your support for WOSU right now. Make that call, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. And Ron, on the east side, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, Ann. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
I have kind of an interesting and unique situation. It's something I've never bumped into before. I just moved into the place I'm living at here last fall, and just early this spring, about a week or two ago, I've got one of those security lights on my back patio, the kind that has two floodlights and then a motion sensor right in the middle, right up near the where the ceiling and the wall meet on the back patio. And I noticed when I was out mowing the yard a couple weeks ago that a bird was trying to put some nesting material up there, and I kept removing it every time I would go past. But then I went back inside the house and came out later in the afternoon and came out, and there was a whole nest there.
Yeah, they work fast.
Well, it's already got its mates made, so I'm not going to tear it down. And it turns out that it's a mother robin living in the nest. And I'm just curious what I've got to expect. I'm not sure if there are eggs in it or not yet, but she sure, anytime I go out on the patio with my dog, she flies off and sits in the nearest tree and watches us like hawks. I'm just curious whether, you know, have the eggs been laid yet, and how long do I have to wait, and what do I have to expect, and should I keep my distance out? That'd be hard because it's right near the back door.
Well, you know, it's your house, and you shouldn't be driven away by that sort of interloper. Robins are actually pretty tough and pretty adaptable to having people around, and, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to stop using the back door or anything. They'll adapt and reach the point where especially once they're on eggs and the eggs are close to hatching, often they'll just sit while people walk right past.
Okay.
Usually she'll lay the eggs pretty soon after the nest is finished, and they incubate the eggs for like 12 to 14 days or so. So it would be like a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And then about another 2 weeks before the young leave the nest. So it could be another month before they actually fledge and fly away.
Oh, okay. Well, will I be able to know from her behavior whether or not the eggs have hatched?
Yeah, well, as soon as the eggs hatch, you'll see the adults coming back and forth bringing food for the young.
Okay.
So it'll be pretty obvious.
It's going to be a fun time trying to keep the dogs away.
Oh, can the dogs jump that high?
Oh, thank goodness, no. They're little miniature dogs,
okay.
So they can't get that high. But if they did, I wouldn't let them out on the back patio at all.
Well, I would say, you know, once it, you'll notice when the eggs have hatched because the, you know, you'll start seeing the adults coming back to feed the young frequently. And, like, if you sort of mark on the calendar about 2 weeks later, or, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks later is when the young are likely to leave the nest, and so you might want to supervise the dogs a little bit more at that point.
Okay. Now, is this also something that, now that I've let it happen once, am I going to have to worry about them coming back next year?
Yeah. Yeah.
If
they like it, you know, they'll come back. But you could put something up, you know, on top of the light, put out some structure that makes it impossible for them to put nest material there.
Actually, I'm glad to provide a little shelter for them. I don't mind sitting out back.
You seem kind of happy about this, Ron, I have to say. There's a little lilt in your voice.
Oh, I do have two big bird feeders right in the center of the
back.
So I'm kind of asking for all these birds. It's not hard to bird watch in Ohio.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ron, for your call, and thanks for listening.
You guys have a good morning.
You too. And thanks to Marianne in Columbus. We have $2,500 to go. My producer, Amy Jurevich, says one more pledge and we can hear the sparrow. So free the sparrow. Make that call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online, that counts too, at WOSU.org. That's 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. And make that call right now and show your support for these kinds of programs with Ken Coffin. We're so lucky to have him on the busiest week of the year for birding in Ohio and in North America. 1-866-897-9678 is the number to call. And at the $120 pledge level, Ken's brand new book, The Field Guide to Advanced Birding, Understanding What You See and Hear. And it is not for advanced birders. It's for anyone who wants to accelerate and improve their knowledge of birding and what they see and hear. Hal in Canal Winchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Have a question about hummingbirds.
Okay.
Do they sing?
Yeah, actually they do, and that's a surprising thing to a lot of people because, you know, you'd think that they were You know, just little chittering things that you see around the bird feeder. You might think, you know, imagine they're not going to do anything more than hum, but they actually, some kinds of hummingbirds have really impressive little songs, and they tend to be sort of repetitive, and they'll do like little phrases over and over. But an interesting thing about them is that they actually have an element of learning in their songs, just like a lot of the true songbirds do.
What do you mean by that, Ken?
Well, there's some of the larger birds like ducks and hawks, cranes and herons, where the voice is just instinctive. It's not learned. It's just instinct. But with the little songbirds, they have sort of a template in their heads to recognize the song of their own kind, but then they have to hear it to learn it. And that's true of the hummingbirds as well, even though they're not related to the true songbirds.
Hal? Thank you.
Yep, thanks for your call, and thanks for listening, Hal. That was a good question. I guess you're right. I'm kind of surprised. So you never know what the listeners are going to come up with. Thank you for that call, and thanks to everyone who gives us a call. If you want to talk with Ken Kaufman, you can. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Not to be confused with WOSU.org, which is the website you can go to make your pledge online. And if you want to make the call, 1-866-897-9678. I don't know if he called or clicked, but David in Dublin put us at $2,380 to go. And now we can hear the sparrow. It is Henslow's sparrow. So that's the Henslow's sparrow. It's a chunky, short-tailed bird, part of the sparrow family, of course. What
now,
makes it special?
Isn't that the most impressive song you've ever heard? I mean, it's like, it's
why don't you tell us what makes it
practically like one syllable? I mean, I was saying, you know, hearing this sparrow could change your life. You know? there actually are some kinds of sparrows that have beautiful songs, but the Henslow sparrow is just this dumb little flick. And it may be that they're trying not to attract too much attention to themselves because they're not great flyers. They live out in native prairies, but Henslow sparrow is a bird that's really not very common anymore. And Ohio is really important to its survival because there are places in the state where there are still some decent populations of them nesting. And they sit out there in these sort of rank, weedy meadows and say, flick, from the top of the weed stalks. And they appear to be putting in a lot of effort, too. If you see one singing, it's sitting on top of this stalk, and it throws its head way back and opens its mouth up wide and makes this dumb little noise. But frequently they'll sing all night as well as all day. If you go out on a moonlit night, 3 o'clock in the morning, hence those sparrows are out there going, flick.
I thought it was kind of cute. We have $2,100 to go. I want to say thanks to Jan and Gahanna and also Janet in Lexington. Thanks for your support for WOSU. Remember, this is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Dan Fisher. Call 1-866-897-9678 and make a pledge of $120 and pick up your very own copy of Ken Kaufman's brand-new book, The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. This book will help you understand what birds you see and hear. It is for birders who want to advance their field skills. It is not for advanced birders. It's for birders who want to better understand their hobby. Pick up this thank you gift for a pledge of $120, but give what you can, no matter what. 1-866-897-9678. If you think you've read this book before, you have not. It is brand new. And I wanted to ask Ken Kaufman, what inspired you to write the book this way at this time?
Well, you know, I appreciate that question. I actually did a book called A Field Guide to Advanced Birding that was published 21 years ago, and it was a very different book. It just was illustrated with some line drawings, and it was at that time, and back in 1990, there wasn't much information available on how to tell different kinds of birds apart. So I had just sort of basic chapters on, this is how you tell Yeah, this is how you tell a Forster's tern from a common tern, or that sort of thing. This is how you tell a Philadelphia vireo from a vireo from some other city, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was just sort of the basic details like that. And the publisher had been wanting me to revise it for some time. But when I got into it, I sort of realized that we needed a different kind of book at this point, because a lot of books have been published now that have more detail on just what the field marks are, you know, what field marks you look for to tell the to tell a Bonaparte's gull from a black-headed gull, for example. Mm-hmm. But even with all those field marks in hand, people were still having trouble, and I realized it had to do with just not understanding things about the birds. So this book was set up to sort of clarify those things. You know, why do you see birds in late summer that look so ragged? And what's going on with that?
Mm-hmm.
And why do the patterns on the wingtips of some birds look different in fall? Just so it's explaining that, and it's full of color illustrations all the way through. So it's a lot more colorful than the old book that I did 21 years ago.
Our gift to you at the $120 level is that book. It's called The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. It's by Ken Kaufman. He's our guest this hour. Anyone with an interest in birding will find the book makes the learning process effective and enjoyable. It will help you understand what you see and hear and will make birding more fun. It lists the 13 principles to field identification, and it lists some common pitfalls. It will help you identify seabirds, owls, hummingbirds, warblers, sparrows, and much, much more. Learn all the techniques you need for bird identification. And it will help both active and novice birders improve their skills. 1-866-897-9678. That's the number to call. Or you can go to WOSU.org and make that pledge online. And please do make that pledge right away. Let's move forward with this spring pledge drive. Let's keep forging ahead. We have a long way to go, and every little bit helps. Whatever you can afford, please share it with us now. 1-866-897-9678. If you want to email a question or comment to Ken Kaufman, that is allsides@wosu.org. And we have an email from Sue on Facebook. She says, we had a baby Cooper's hawk that flew into our window last spring. It was injured and has been taken care of by the Ohio Wildlife Center ever since. They will be releasing our friend named Minnie Coop soon here at the Columbus Foundation. What are the odds of our little friend nesting here with us after the release?
Well, that's hard to say. If the bird were migrating through, if it happened to have its injury while it was just passing through, it might, once it's released, it might take off and go on to someplace farther north. But if it was a bird that was raised somewhere in the immediate area, then it might very well come back and nest very nearby, because often these birds will come back and nest in the same general neighborhood where they were raised.
And by the way, to Sue on Facebook, the Columbus Foundation gave us a little vote of support this morning on Facebook, and I just want to tell you I saw that, and we appreciate it. Thanks for your vote of support, Columbus Foundation. We still have $2,100 to go and just about 26 minutes. If just we get, you know, one call, you know, 20 calls between now and the end of the program, we'll make that goal. 1-866-897-9678. Help us, you know, pare down that $2,100. 1-866-897-9678. We are behind this drive. Help us catch up by helping us meet the goal this hour. You can go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge online as well. Ken Kaufman's my guest this hour. He'll take your questions and comments if you want to call us at 614-292-8513. You write that there's no wrong way to go birding. And I was really interested and surprised when you say in the book that even if you don't like gulls, you're talking about gulls, that you should think of them as excellent practice birds for developing the perceptions you need to identify other birds. And that really cracked me up because, number one, I thought, aren't all gulls alike? But tell us about why they make such great practice birds.
Well, yeah, I mean, to a lot of people, a seagull is a seagull, but there are three or four kinds that are regularly found in Ohio in pretty good numbers, and then some others that show up as rarities. And one thing that's interesting about them is that they vary so much with age as they grow up. Little ring-billed gull, you can see, you know, in any fast food parking lot in the state. They really like french fries, you know. But they go through three distinct stages before they get to adult plumage. And just looking at those and seeing how they change with the season is great practice for learning how to recognize other kinds of birds. And it's fascinating the way the feathers are replaced. You know, bird feathers are really strong, lightweight structures. They're pretty amazing, but they wear out, so the bird has to replace them. And they go through this process of molting their feathers. They drop a few at a time, and new ones grow in their place. And so the pattern of the bird changes in a very orderly way. It's easier to see sometimes on the gulls than it is on other birds because the gulls are big enough. And they're fairly tame, and they sit around so you can study them. And so watching the, you know, if you become gull-oriented, it can help your understanding of other kinds of birds.
Do you like gulls?
Oh, yeah.
You like all birds?
Yeah, well, I used to hate gulls.
Okay.
Because I couldn't tell one kind from another. But, the you know, once you take on that challenge and start to understand what's going on in front of you, they become really fascinating.
They probably wouldn't appreciate me saying this, but at the landfills, there are lots of gulls, too. You called them seagulls, but you don't really have to be a seagull, be around a sea to be a gull anymore.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the seagull is sort of it's not an accurate term. We see them, well, if we go to the coast, but they don't, most of them actually don't go out to sea. They're landlubbers, and they're not true seabirds anyway, and they're very common on the Great Lakes and on the rivers of the interior, and you know, even all over the state of Ohio.
Okay, Amy's cracking down again. The phones are too quiet. We need at least two more pledges, and then you can hear an owl sound. I won't tell you what owl it is, but we'll play that, you know, kind of close to the best here. But pick up the phone and show your support. You don't have to pledge $120 if you can't afford it. Pledge whatever you can afford. If you can afford more than $120, please do. We need all the help we can get. We really need to make the goal this hour. We have 22 minutes to go, and we have about $2,100 to go. So, you know, let's get that many more calls in, and we'll make the pledge. We'll make the goal, I mean. Make your pledge right now at 1-866-897-9678. If you're enjoying the show, please tell us and show your support by making a pledge right now at 1-866-897-9678. Two more calls, and you can hear the owl sound. Oh, and clicks count, too, at WOSU.org. Just two more calls and clicks count for the owl sound. And Marianne in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi. Yes, I did just pledge, and I'm looking forward to receiving my book.
Thank you, Marianne.
My question is, with all of the rain and the high water, does that mean there will be fewer baby Canada geese this year? I just noticed from their nest-building behavior, they're often on little islands, and do they get flooded out and not reproduce?
That will happen in some cases. Up in this area near Lake Erie, a lot of the Canada geese have already hatched, and even though they were nesting close to the water, they seem to have succeeded in bringing off young. So in most cases, I don't think it's going to be a problem for the geese.
What about in flooding in places like Tennessee right now?
Yeah, that's certainly going to affect some of the water birds there. It's going to be more of a big deal for the marsh birds like the rails and gallinules and so on, because their nests are very low and they can easily be flooded out. It wouldn't be a factor for something like the little pied-billed grebe because it actually builds a floating nest.
Oh, really?
Which makes a lot of sense when you stop to think about it.
Wow, they're incredibly adaptive animals. Marianne, thanks for your call.
Sure, thanks. Bye.
Take care. If you want to talk with Ken Kaufman, you can, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ken is kind enough to spend some time with us today during the busiest week of the year for birding. Please be kind enough and show your appreciation for that by giving us a call at 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Every little bit helps. Anything you can offer, and it tells us that you appreciate the programming. Thanks to Susan and Joel in Columbus and also Wanda in Columbus. We have $1,900 to go and just about 19 minutes exactly. So 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and make that call right now. I think we can have an owl sound now. Let's see what we have up our sleeve here with the owls. It's the barn owl. This next clip may not sound like much like an animal, but it's actually the scream of an adult barn owl. I can't wait. Well, as my intern put it in our script, that was by no means a sonorous call. So pretty. That's a $10 word there. What is the barn owl's deal there? It sounds more like a screech.
Yeah, isn't that a great sound?
It is pretty amazing.
Blood curdling. I mean, they make a lot of different sounds, and sometimes you'll just hear them doing the sort of clicking. They do a loud click with their mandibles or their bill, and they do sort of a hissing like shh. But when they get really worked up, they do this awful scream that I think a lot of haunted house stories probably originated with barn owls nesting up in the attic and doing that horrible scream around midnight. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
But they're great birds to have around. They've become pretty uncommon in most parts of Ohio, but there's still quite a few over in the Amish country. Amish farmers like having them around because the barn owls eat so many mice.
Mm-hmm.
And so they mostly eat mice and rats. So the Amish farmers will put up special nesting boxes for them up in the up in their barns.
Is it because there's fewer and fewer barns that there's fewer and fewer barn owls, or just any kinds of are there other sorts of structures that they might be able to use in the same way?
Well, they will use other kinds of structures, and historically they nested in big hollow trees and so on. So we're not quite sure why their numbers have declined so much. Changes in agricultural practice. There aren't as many rodents around the edges of the fields as there used to be.
We have $1,900 to go. Thanks to everybody for showing your support. We know that All Sides listeners love the bird shows. They love the shows with Ken Kaufman. Show your support for that now and tell us that you love it. Doesn't matter how much you can spare. Whatever you can spare, we can use it. We're running behind this pledge drive, and we need your help. Don't wait until the end. Give us a call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. If you want to speak with Ken Kaufman, the number is 614-292-8513, and your calls are very, very welcome. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Every day, All Sides brings you in-depth conversations with newsmakers and interesting people in our community like Ken Kaufman. Birding is one of the fastest growing hobbies, and it is one of the topics we cover often on All Sides. We are asking you to put a dollar value on the news and information you hear on All Sides. Pick the amount that fits into your budget. If that amount is $120, then our thank you gift to you is the book Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. Go online to our secure server at WOSU.org or talk to our volunteers at 1-866-897-9678. I promised them we would keep them busy this hour. Don't make me look bad. The volunteers put in a lot of time, and they feel very gratified when they can actually answer a phone. Thank you to Rita and Michael in Columbus. We have just about $1,500 to go. We are halfway to the goal, $1,500 in about 15 minutes. Give us a call right now, 1-866-897-9678. 877-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Our goal this hour was $3,000, and we have just about $1,500 to go in the next 15 minutes. Go online to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Make that call right now and support 89.7 NPR News while Ken Kaufman is on the air. It'll make him feel good, too. It is like voting with your dollars and showing us this is a topic you care about. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. And thank you for your support. Ken, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the idea that the book isn't intended for already advanced birders.
Yeah, we sort of went back and forth with the publisher about what to call it, and sort of my original working title was just Name That Bird, which maybe sounds a little more friendly, but my target audience when I was writing it was myself at the age of 14, because I got into bird watching when I was a kid, and I was a rabid young birder trying to figure out what I was seeing out there and why the birds that I saw didn't look like the pictures in the book. And so I'm providing the information that I wished that I had when I was getting started. So a lot of it is just it's basics of different ways of looking at things. You know, if you're looking at ducks and trying to figure out what kind of duck it is, here are some strategies of particular kinds of things to look for. Or if you're looking at hawks, how do you go about looking at a hawk in order to figure it out most rapidly? So it's really a book of strategies and how to learn the birds.
Right. Don't let the title fool you. Kaufman's Advanced Birding will provide any level of birder with a wider field of view for identifying birds. That's from a reviewer. Were some of the reviewers skeptical at first? What kind of feedback have you been getting from them?
Oh, I've been really gratified to get some great feedback. I like that comment about the wider field of view.
Mm-hmm.
And another reviewer said that if you put in a little time reading here, it's going to pay off great dividends in the field. Another person who's been a longtime birder said he hadn't really thought that anything could be better than my first edition, the old Advanced Birding from years ago, but he realized now that he was wrong, that the new one was better. So, it's really pleasing to hear that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was reading your blog. You mentioned when you were a kid struggling to learn the warblers, as we all did struggle as children to learn the warblers.
Oh, yeah.
I somehow got the idea. You wrote that I somehow got the idea that they were all pretty much the same aside from their markings, as if nature had taken a basic warbler outline and filled it in repeatedly with different colors. So a lot of people think of warblers in terms of what they look like, and it's really their sound is just as unique.
Yeah, and their behavior, too. They've all got really distinctive little actions and things. And if you spend a little bit more time looking, then you start to realize that there's like a personality that comes across when you're looking at the bird.
This morning, we have $1,440 to go. We need to hear from 8 people right now. We have $1,440 to go. Be one of those 8 people. We have 10 or 11 minutes left to go. Be one of the 8 that puts us over the top this hour. We need your help. Do it now. Now's the time. That way you can make room for the next set of people down the line. 1-866-897. We don't want you all stacking up. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. When you make the pledge during the hour, it's directly telling the folks who run the station that this is the kind of programming you appreciate. You can pledge anytime, but when you do it during this hour, they know you're telling them you want this kind of programming. We love to have the bird shows and the naturalist shows with Julie Zicka and all kinds of people like that, and Ken Kaufman, and I enjoy them. I know the listeners do too. So give us a call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org at the $120 pledge level. Our gift to you is the Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. It's Ken Kaufman's brand new book. It's just been out a month. 1-866-897-9678. Seven more calls now. Thanks to Carla and John in Columbus. We have seven more calls to go in just about 10 minutes. We can do it. Seven calls. Be one of the seven. Be the one of the seven. 1-866-897-9678. I wanted to talk to you about the proposed three-year moratorium on the building of any additional wind turbines. And don't let me forget to do that. But first, I wanted to get to an email from a listener. They write, on Sunday, I went just below the Hoover Dam that impounds Hoover Reservoir, east of Westerville. I saw 13 great blue herons standing in the water of Big Walnut Creek, just below the dam, or in the dam's spillway area. The water was so high, it was overflowing the dam, and there were lots of small fish being washed over. Therefore, a great number of herons were feeding on the fish, and I saw two of them catch small fish, probably shad. What do they like to eat, Ken?
They're real generalists. I mean, great blue herons will eat practically anything, and that's one reason why they're so successful. It's our largest heron in North America, and it's also found all over the continent, even up to southern Alaska. And it's partly because they apparently don't care, you know. They're not going after the real prize, you know, the game fish or anything. They'll eat frogs, they'll eat fish, they'll eat muskrats, you know. They'll eat baby muskrats. They'll even catch small birds sometimes. But snakes, crawdads, great blue herons will eat anything, and they're very opportunistic, and they're good at finding these spots where there are concentrations of food. So you get something like that where you have a flooding situation and a little fish being washed over the dam.
Mm-hmm.
They find that kind of thing really quickly.
And do they travel in packs like that? Or, you know, I mean, is that a typical amount of blue herons traveling together?
No, that's an unusual concentration. They'll nest in colonies. They'll have quite a few nests close together, but they usually go off and forage just on their own. They don't usually move around in packs, but they will concentrate where the feeding's good.
Where there's good food. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Tom in Newark, six more calls or web pledges. It's a brand new book, by the way, folks. I just want to reiterate that. It just came out last month, The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. And you don't have this book yet, and your birding friends don't have this book. And if somebody you know, maybe dad is a big birder, it's a great gift. It would make a great gift. Kill Two Birds with One Stone, The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. It's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. It would make a great gift if you already have it yourself, or maybe you're not big on birding or that big on birding, but you know somebody who is. We all do. It's the biggest hobby in the United States. Somebody you know, look to your left and your right, loves to bird. Thanks to David in Columbus. Five more pledges. That's all we need. Five more pledges to get us over the top. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Five more pledges. That's all we need. We have about a little over 6 minutes now. 1-866-897-9678. Or make that pledge online at WOSU.org. It just takes a couple minutes. The operators are standing by. There's like six or seven of them back there. I went back and said hello before the show. Make their day and help us meet this goal. 1-866-897-9678. Or go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge online. Thanks to David in Columbus again. Five more pledges at all we need and 6 minutes to go. From the Sunday's John Switzer column, I don't know if you ever catch that, Ken, or not. It's in the Columbus Dispatch. Somebody wrote in. They said they have a favorite bird, but they're not sure what variety he is, just his name. He is a little chubby bird, black in body with a gray chest and a wedge-shaped head, and his name is Blackie. That's what they mean. He is they don't know what kind of bird he is. They just know what he's named. His name is Blackie. And he has returned to our yard for the past 5 years and enjoys the caterpillars that I place on the walkway. I start to worry if I don't see him for a couple of days. And what I wondered about that was, is it likely that it's the same bird coming back 5 years in a row?
Yeah, there's a very good chance that it is, because the birds do have a tendency to come back to the same places over and over. And I confess I can't tell from the description what kind of bird it is. But, if a lot of the medium-sized songbirds will live, as much as 7 or 8 years. And so Blackie may continue to come back for a few more years.
Thanks to an anonymous listener, we have, and thanks to Carol in Plain City as well. We need 3 more pledges before the end of the hour. 3 more pledges. Please make your pledge now at 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. We just need 3 more pledges. Be one of those 3. And if you can, we can still squeeze in another call. If you can squeeze it in, 1-614-292-8513. So we'll try to squeeze in one more call with Ken Kaufman. He's my guest this hour. He is the author, he's best-selling author, and now his new book, The Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. It's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. And Glenn in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I finally got to hear my first nighthawk the other night. Maybe they've been around for a while, but it was a new one for me this season. I had a question about the local excitement about the Kirtland warbler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you talked about it earlier. I missed the first part of the show. But apparently an Ohio State student was walking past the area and heard the call and identified it, and then the word went out. What are the chances of 50-some thousand students at Ohio State? How many of them would...
What are you trying to say, Glenn?
Isn't that impressive? I'd be willing to bet that there are several dozen students there who would have recognized the song of Kirtland's warbler. There are a lot of stealth birders out there who are secretly watching birds and listening to birdsong recordings and have memorized the sound of Kirtland's warbler so they can search for one during the spring.
Now, would that indicate that there were many more birds of that species around,
as
just that one bird?
Really hard to say. I mean, the whole population of Kirtland's warbler is only about 3,000, and Northwest Ohio is the only place where it stops over regularly in migration. The others just, they pretty much disappear because it is a real needle in a haystack thing. They're migrating from the Bahamas to Michigan, and they just sort of disappear in the landscape. So pretty amazing that bird was found.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for your call. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody for their support. Thanks to Tim in Newark, and thanks to Nina in Worthington. One more pledge to meet our goal. Just one more pledge. Be the one more pledge. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. My guest this hour has been Ken Kaufman. He's the naturalist birder. He's the author of the Kaufman Guides. This is his latest, The Field Guide to Advanced Birding. Ken, thanks for joining us today.
Well, Ann, thanks so much for having me on, and please keep up the great work there.
Thanks. Maybe you can come on when we're not both so busy.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, that's Ken Kaufman. He's been our guest this hour. He's the author of Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding, among many others. It is our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. If you'd like to get that book, it's our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. You can feed your birding hunger, and you can also feed your support for WOSU and 89.7 NPR News. We need one more call. One more call. Please be the call. It'll make you feel really good inside. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and help us meet our goal this hour. We need just one more call. Thanks for everybody's support this hour. Do what you can for your public media station, WOSU 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7. WOSU HD1 and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Thank you.